This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And here's Fox creeping forward. He pulls up, 18-footer. De'Aaron Fox puts the Kings on top. Makes once, fakes twice, gives to Belly. 35-foot three for the win. Nemanja Bjelica.
We deserve this win, man.
When we're done, we go chop it up, eat, right. Golf, whatever you want to do. For these 48 minutes, I ain't about them games.
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse podcast presented by the King's Herald. My name is Brendan Nunes. No Rich on here today, but I'm joined by a special guest. We have Dane Moore of the Dane Moore NBA podcast, covers the Minnesota Timberwolves. How you doing today, Dane?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. Talk some Kings and Wolves hoops.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate you coming on, man. And today we primarily have you on here today because one of the most notable names on the GM candidates list for the Sacramento Kings, as Adam Simon and Trajan Langdon have now officially pulled out, is Sachin Gupta. And, you know, who currently is the executive VP of basketball operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And you've had some interactions with, we've done some profiles for GM candidates before the list came out, and neither one of our two people in Perry or Hinkie were mentioned, but you know, we have some connections to Hinkie here with Gupta. And the way I wanted to start, man, was what was your first impressions of Gupta when he was brought over to Minnesota, maybe like your initial interactions with him when he was brought onto that front office?
Yeah, man. Well, first of all, I'll say it's Sachin Gupta, which is definitely, you know, I messed that name up too the first time I met him. But that first time I did meet Sachin was the Timberwolves put on or had a bunch of us Timberwolves beat writers to a Minnesota Twins game and kind of like rented a team room area where we all got to kind of meet the new front office, new coaching staff, and all that. And it was funny because I had heard Sachin's name. I knew his connection, you know, to the process. And I don't know, it's just kind of funny how sometimes we shape pictures or ideas of people, you know, based off of, I don't know, hearsay or whatever, what kind of played out. And it was just, he was just a really normal guy and totally such a departure from like the analytics nerd sort of narrative that probably surrounded him and in the process and just kind of everything in Philadelphia there. And he was just an extremely normal person who is really young. I think he's still in his late 30s, I believe. And yeah, I was just impressed with his, it was really striking to me his ability to not only interact with a layman person like myself, but also just listen. He struck me as a really good listener. And I always kind of just generally in the world think that some of the smartest people are some of the best listeners.
Yeah. All the reading up I did on Sachin, it's hilarious. I asked you the pronunciation right before we started this and still totally butchered it. all of the reading up I did on him. Yeah. I mean, the humbleness was mentioned repeatedly. And just to kind of get into his background a little bit, I did, there is a computer science degree from MIT and then later an MBA from Stanford. And, you know, one thing pointed out, especially with that, team of guys that was working with Hinkie in Philadelphia was none of them, or I shouldn't say none of them, but, the head guys there really didn't have any prior basketball experience themselves in regards to playing. But we see that being more common. And if I misspeak or have something wrong in any way, feel free to cut me off. I believe it's the same way as Rosas there. What's your impression on guys that don't have this prior basketball experience in regards to playing themselves, Like Sacramento had a pretty bad experience where you just brought in a former player, Divock, but no had no prior front office experience and going through that process. So what's your impressions on a guy that hasn't had any playing time or coaching experience himself?
Yeah, man, I think both can work. It tends to really blow up, it seems, when the player ones don't work, right? Just because there's almost sort of an arrogance to the, I know how to do this. I've been an elite basketball player my whole life. And that means I just know the game and everything better than 99.9% of the world. And oftentimes, I think what's sort of kind of catching up with that more and more in the NBA is that those guys like Divac or, you know, whoever, some of the other former players who have fizzled out, is that they are competing against people like Sasha Gupta, who may not have the playing experience and may not have the game experience, but are far superior in game theory. And I mean, I just know that, obviously, Brendan, you know the big deal with the Kings and the Sixers back in the day. I mean, Sasha was Hinkie's number two in Philadelphia, who fleeced the Kings there. So there's this kind of competitive disadvantage, I think, that the former players are developing. But at the same time, I think, to be fair, an underrated part of a former player being a GM is the fact that they can relate with the other players. And it's important to be the head decision maker, I think, to have the trust at least of your star players, at least of your starters, to kind of believe in what it is you're doing. And you can't just have this, like, you can be a non-basketball player, but you still got to be like a basketball guy and find ways to relate, because I think that's critical in relating to your players, relating to your fan base. Like, at the end of the day, this is basketball. So sometimes I think that's where people like Sam Hinkie missed the mark, and where they were ultimately were fired, is not necessarily checking that, like, sort of human interaction box.
It's interesting. Do you have maybe a theory on why, like, Sasha, so Hinkie, with the whole process situation, like you mentioned, Sasha was the VP of basketball ops for that process, the Sixers, I have from 2014 to 16, and also was a consultant right before that. It's interesting to me that, like, Hinkie was kind of the face of it, and he seems to be, like, banished from coming back into the NBA because it was terrible, yeah, PR from them. Yet, you know, Sasha was given a lot of credit under more quietly. Yet
it's kind of bizarre, right?
Like, right, he doesn't have this attached to him sort of thing, right?
Yeah, where, like, Hinkie has become a martyr, and Sasha, like, if I can speak from Minnesota here, like, when the report of him, Sacramento, wanting to interview him, like, at least judging from, you know, what I see, is like Minnesota fans are like, no, we can't lose Gupta. We can't lose Gupta. Like, he's the trade machine guru. We need him to make all these trades and everything. And it's funny. It feels like we are kind of speaking out of both sides of our mouths there, but it does highlight, I think, which is such an important thing for being a GM these days, or president of basketball operations, is you got to nail the PR element of it. Like, you're a politician. If you're Sam Hinkie, or Vadi Divac, or Danny Ainge, whatever, like, you are a politician, and you need to be selling yourself and what it is you're doing. Like, we had such a problem here with Tom Thibodeau, because he was just like, the winning will solve all the problems. The winning will solve all the problems. There was no connection there. There was no showing behind, you know, behind the curtains of what's going on. And I think that's why Hinkie just took all the brunt of it, because he was so stone-faced. He was such a bad politician, even if he was a brilliant, you know, transactional general manager. But I think Sasha just wasn't in the limelight there in any sort of media way. And he's just a very, like, diminutive, quiet guy. So, but it is kind of funny. At the end of the day, if you believe, which I think this is a bad take, like, if you believe Sam Hinkie shouldn't be running an organization, well, then Sasha Gupta shouldn't be running an organization either, because, like, those two guys were totally in lockstep of what their theories are of, you know, creating a basketball roster.
Right. And yeah, Hinkie was one of the guys we dove into, and you know, the process was abusing the system in a way, but it was, you know, the future was the goal, where it was an eventual championship.
System. It was the system.
Right.
And I mean, I just know from, you know, from talking to Sashin, and you know, he acknowledges, and if you talk to him, he would acknowledge that they messed up the PR element of that. Sam Hinkie would acknowledge they messed up the PR element of that. Like, they couldn't just hide behind this process sign for years and then, and just be like, it's going to be good eventually. Like, that wasn't enough. Like, yet at the same time, it was the most optimal strategy, or one of the most optimal strategy, for building it, like taking a team from mediocrity into potentially becoming something special.
Right. And Hinkie and Sashin were out of there before they really got to see it through fully. So I guess it's given an incomplete grade, but I think that, you know, they were successful in their goal there. And again, I like that they were so future focused, and a long-term goal there. And yeah, being connected to that team as well as Maury, and it's a lot of trade guys. And then obviously Sashin developed the ESPN trade machine, which my understanding is that kind of what led to him becoming a CBA expert before he got involved with any front offices. So he's going to have this attachment to him of being a trade guy. And Rosas seems to be a guy that's extremely aggressive there as well. Hopefully this isn't like just me being irresponsible asking you to speculate, but do you think that it's fair for Sashin to be viewed as a trade guy if he were to get a trade-focused GM, if he were to get his own opportunity, or is it simply just the guys that he's been under and doing what he's been asked?
Sashin is a strategy guy. He is going to out-strategy you. That is the plan. So if that means trading, is what you need. It's kind of based on what your roster is, right? Like, take the Timberwolves, for example, like Rosas and Gupta in the Wolves front office, like, inherit this Tom Thibodeau, like, Timber Bulls roster that, you know, isn't going to be emblematic of the ethos of what they want to do when they want to space the floor, they want to play faster, they want to be younger. So the strategy move there in Gupta's eyes is obviously, like, we got to upend the roster. And, you know, they've been running the Wolves for 1 year, and there's only two players on the Timberwolves that are there still from when they, you know, when they inherited the team, and Karl-Anthony Towns and Josh Okogie. So that the strategy there was flip as much as you can. But I think you can look at, like, you can look at Houston as an example. I'm not saying, like, Maury is a conservative trader, but they've also, like, they've built accordingly because they had, like, their main piece in place in Harden, or, you know, over, like, since they acquired Harden, and they've kind of, like, created on the margins. They've been more creative in free agency, whether it was getting PJ Tucker with the MLE or just cycling in a bunch of dudes on, like, minimum contracts and that sort of thing. So I think, like, the way to think of Sashin is he's just, like, a game theorist and is the type of person who's going to, you know, get the whiteboard out there and play out option one, option two, all the way out to option 100, and you know, use theory to come out with what the best choice is there.
My impression from my readings was a very outside the box thinker, and one part from the John Krasinski piece on him that was just phenomenal and everybody should read.
So good. Yeah. If Kings fans are interested in Sashin Gupta, you should for sure read this story.
And one of my favorites is that they go to this Houston rodeo, and there's all these people that are attempting to pull calves into this ring as a competition sort of thing. And they're talking about it the day after. And
it's a rodeo, yeah.
Yeah. And Gupta the day after, the quote is, "It was interesting. Why don't they just turn around and pull it the opposite way? The calf would pull against them and walk right into the ring." And it says the room fell silent. And I think that's just hilarious. Like, it's so outside the box thinking, yet, like, it seems like
it's so basic.
Right. Right.
Yeah, he has this way of, or as John describes it in the article, of like taking complex situations, pulling them apart thread by thread to like highlight the thread that makes you go, oh, why didn't I think about it that way? And like to elaborate on your picture there, there's these like kids who are pulling on bulls and they're trying to be strong and pull them through this gate and in, and you win the competition if you're able to get the bull to like come into the area. And what Sachin's theory was just go stand on the opposite side of them and pull, you know, pull against them, and the bull's going to beat you. So it's going to pull, lock itself right into the gate for you. Totally obvious, right? If you think about it now in hindsight, you're like, how have they not done this? But it was a whole rodeo. There's like probably a whole competition where nobody was able to do it. So yeah, that's just kind of the way he's wired. Like, he's an MIT dude. He's got an MBA from Stanford. He's clearly like smart, which probably almost every GM is. But it's just, I think, I go back to what I said before, and he's just like such a listener and such a thinker where he's, I think he just spends more time like processing stuff than maybe you or I do, or just the average person does, because, you know, he's trying to pull apart those things thread by thread. And he's an interesting dude.
Yeah, to say the least, for sure. Definitely a theorizer. And I think there also was a bit of time that after the 76ers, he went back to the Houston Rockets. And you mentioned the, you know, sort of building around Harden. My impression I got was that he was also it's hard to tell how much of a contributor each guy in the front office is for these moves, but he was given a little bit of credit for Harden being brought in to Houston as well, at least a part of that move, and was only there for 1 year before he was assistant GM of the Detroit Pistons from 2018 to 19. I actually wasn't really able to find anything about that. Do you possibly have any knowledge on his time in Detroit?
Well, yeah, it was a weird situation, because it was, he kind of was there, but only very temporarily, you know, after Stan Van Gundy got fired, and then they had Stefanski kind of took over. And so they brought him in that little window right there that was between, I might have only been like 6 months between then and when Rosas was hired, who's Rosas is the Timberwolves new president of basketball operations. And by the time, like, Rosas and Gupta are super tight. So I just know from having talked to Rosas, he was like, if I ever got a president of basketball operations job, like, it was, you know, I always knew that Sasha was going to be the one coming with me, but Sasha had just signed this contract with the Pistons. So it was actually kind of dragged out where Gupta wasn't actually officially with the Wolves until like the start of this season. So he missed last season's draft, kind of the off season and everything. So he was under contract with the Pistons that he had to finish out. But at the same time, like, the Pistons knew he was going to Minnesota. So he wasn't very involved. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Funky situation for sure.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, coming to Minnesota, like you said, attached to Rosas there. Most of what I've seen was that he really was attached to different guys, mainly from the time in Houston, which, by the way, there's a ridiculous amount of guys that are just crazy basketball minds that were on that Houston front office. But do you know of, is there anybody that Gupta likes to bring with him? I don't know if he's even technically in a position where he's able to do that. But it seems like he more so follows some of these names that have been able to get themselves, like you're saying, a president of basketball operations job for Rosas. Right. Do you happen to know, is there anybody that Gupta, if he were to be given a opportunity like what's presented in Sacramento, that he would want to bring with?
You know, that's a good question. I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, he wasn't like when Rosas hired Gupta, he didn't hire, that was like his one guy from Houston that he brought in. Most of the other guys in the Wolves' current front office were like Joe Branch used to work for Roc Nation as an agent, and he's another one of the assistant GMs. Another guy named Gianluca Pascucci was with the Brooklyn Nets, and he came. So there's no like there's nobody in the Timberwolves' current front office that, to my knowledge, that Gupta has worked with before outside of Rosa. So I don't think he would be taking anyone from the Timberwolves if he were to be hired by the Kings. So I would more so, my assumption would be, is that he would put his staff together from his previous stops being Houston, Philadelphia, and maybe even Detroit. I don't know that much about that, you know, exactly what's going on there. But you know what? The one thing I do want to say before we get too far into this is, like, I don't think Rosas is going to, like, I don't think he's going to go take the Kings job. Like, they just started this. I mean, it's clear that those guys have known each other for like 15 years. They have a way that they know they want to build a team together. They have that process rolling in Minnesota. They traded all these guys. They got D'Angelo Russell. They got Kat. Like, I think my assumption would be that Gupta's going to want to see this play out with his good friend Rosas, who they both have been wanting to do this, you know, for a long time. And I just think that, quite frankly, and I don't mean this to, like, rip on Sasha, but I'm not sure if he's ready for the political part of being a GM. Like, there's a lot of front facing that comes with that. And Rosas takes all of that on here in Minnesota, just like Hinkie took that all on in Philadelphia, as we were talking about before. Like, you know, it's like on a bench. Some guys never end up being the head coach. They want to be the top assistant, and that, you know, that's good for them. They don't want to deal with all the media crap of needing to get interviewed all the time, all this and that. And part of me wonders if that's ultimately, like, Sasha's comfort zone and where he'll just want to stay. I would guess there's also another side of him that would eventually want to be the guy actually calling the shots, but I would think that he would want some more time to get some more reps in being more of a public figure, because being a GM in the NBA, you're a public figure, and there's a lot that comes with that. So my assumption, or what I would say, is I think he's qualified for it. Ultimately, I don't think he's going to leave Minnesota.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that means hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. And right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
You're breaking my heart, Dane. You're breaking my heart. Clearly my favorite candidate left here. Simon and Langdon have pulled out. I'll counter you a little bit here. I see where you're coming from for sure. Do you think that the way to get that experience of being the PR guy is simply doing it? Or do you think that being in these VP roles, you can also, like, train yourself in that a bit?
I think it's a personality thing with Sasha. Like, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, that, yeah, you kind of trial by fire and you learn. But I don't really know how to, like, describe this other than, like, Sasha's kind of like a quiet, shy guy. And I don't know. I just think he kind of, like, it's always going to be, I think that it's always hard if you just kind of have that your personality is built that way to go jump into. I mean, think about how many things Divac's had to do over the years and all that. Like,
right.
I just don't know if it's ever going to be the right thing for Sashin. If you would want that, but I guess that to your point, he's probably just gotta jump into it and do it. That said, maybe he's not like even. I think he's like 37 or something. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong there. I just don't even think it's on his mind yet. It has been on his mind that he's ready for that. I think he's looking at maybe the next decade of his life or 5 years or something of growing before kind of stepping into that position. That would be my ultimate guess.
Yeah. One other thing I'll say on that is, do you think that there could be a relationship in a way where, you know, say Sashin's general manager and there's a president of basketball operations bought in that takes on most of the PR duties? Like, I mean,
yep.
No Sacramento fans are happy with the Dumar situation, mainly because that role is super undefined, seemingly for incoming GMs, but that could sort of work out.
I agree. I think that's like what the move would be. But then if you're Sashin, you go, all right, well, who's ultimately pulling the strings? Like, does Dumars have last call, or does Gupta have last call? Because if Gupta doesn't have last call, then why would he leave Rosas? You know,
right?
He's just kind of changing something. I mean, I don't. Maybe you get more pay or that. I just don't think he'd be incentivized to move into this like two-headed monster thing with Dumars or choose your figurehead X. Like, I think ultimately, he's going to be offered a job, whether it's from the Kings or somebody else down the line, because he has a very good reputation around the league. He seems, you know, to me to be very knowledgeable. But he's going to have to like want that. He's going to have to want that lead role. And I'm, you know, not trying to play armchair psychologist. I'm just going off of, you know, the conversations I've had with him. And I think it's kind of been like this chaotic sort of run since the process, right? Where they get fired, and then he's kind of out of the league for a little while, and he gets back into this couple months with the Pistons, and then that's done, and now you're on the Timberwolves, and you're like, all right, I'm with my boy Gerson, and like, here we go, we're starting things. Coronavirus, like, he just got married a couple months ago. Like, I'd be surprised if he is ready, is wanting to go take that on, but I haven't talked to him about it.
Yeah. And, you know, there is like the classic, there's only 30 of these jobs, but Sacramento definitely is not an appealing landing spot. And sort of talking on that Dumar situation, there was in the piece from a friend of the show, Jason Anderson, I'll just read the quote here real quick, is the new balance of power within the front office and Dumar's role moving forward is still uncertain and remains a point of confusion among candidates, sources said. But I'm told the new GM will be the team's top basketball official and will report directly to Ranadive. So the candidates are confused, but for some reason it's coming out to the media that the GM will just report straight to the owner. It's not a good look for incoming candidates, and would not be surprised if that made people less attracted to the job here. With Sashin really being behind the scenes in most of his places, it was hard for me to find all too much on him. Do you feel like there's anything else that we should touch on with him before I ask you a little bit about the Timberwolves draft situation?
Well, now that you got my head running on this, like, more just applying what I understand the, you know, Sashin to be and applied to like the Kings roster, like what direction are you thinking they would want to go with this roster transactionally, if they did bring a guy in like Gupta who has participated in many different trades, and it kind of, you know, just looking at the Kings roster would probably, am I right to say that you think it would sort of be a bit of an upheaval, kind of like what happened to the Wolves in the past 12 months?
Yeah. I've been a big advocate of, you know, at this point, I already think there's a real good chance that you are the worst or one of the worst teams in the Western Conference. Even if you do try to win games next year, they've been just trying to chase this 8 seed, which sure, you end a playoff drought, but you're not going to get further than an 8 seed if you're just bringing in guys like a Deadman or Trevor Ariza, Corey Joseph, guys that I liked and I actually was fans of, but like, that's just not going to get you anywhere right now. And the roster's not as young as many people think it is. with Bogdanović and Hield both being about 27, I believe it is. So to me, yeah, I think that you move on from one of those guys. You look to trade Bielitsa, and you really just kind of take an upside guy in this bit of an underwhelming draft and focus on getting the probably the best selection possible in 2021. And yeah, retooling to fit the timeline of De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley.
Right. Like, and so I think that would be a requirement for Gupta is to, if he's under any sort of pressure to putting a team together that's supposed to compete for the eighth seed, I think he would look at the roster and say, well, no way in hell am I doing that. I think he would, I'm not saying he'd go full process with it or anything, but I think just, again, the logical, the most optimal strategy for the Kings would be to be bad next year, letting go or trading some of the, you know, competent but more expensive pieces so as to have a young core that's probably going to, you know, lose a lot of games and, you know, kind of come up on the upswing in 3 years. Like, that's the team I could see Gupta taking over. I would just be shocked if he accepted a job with any sort of like make the playoffs next year mandate out of, you know, from Renadive.
And I do worry that, you know, maybe that is what Vivek is hoping for. But, you know, I'll say, like, I think the fan base would have no problem getting behind a young, exciting roster, even if they were losing some games. Fan base in Sacramento has been great supporting. I think they can handle two more years to actually power it out through the future compared to winning one and then spending 10 more if not making the playoffs. Sure. Probably being a little overdramatic. But yeah, I worry that maybe there is this eight seed goal, but I would hope that whatever candidate came in, if they had this, I'm sure part of the interview process is this is what I would want to do with the roster. And I would hope that Vivek is open to multiple possibilities. Like I said, I'm definitely a fan of retooling, getting younger. But yeah,
let me answer your question real quick, or just kind of like closing thoughts on them, because I think it's an important, particularly for these guys who get kind of labeled as analytics nerds. And I don't remember if it was when I was talking to Sasha or when I was talking to Rosas, but like what Sasha's role is not to be like a number analytics guy in Minnesota, and nor is it anybody's in the front office. Like, they apply analysis to analytics. Like, that's what they call their analytics guy. So they're analyzing whatever the situation is. Like, Sasha goes out and scouts. Like, he is just as much crunching numbers and doing CBA stuff as he is, you know, going to games, getting out on the, you know, the road to scout and do those sort of things. So, you know, to make the basketball player, you know, or athlete comparison, like, he's not a one-tool athlete. Like, he has experience doing all these different things. He's worked obviously substantially and with trade stuff, familiar with the collective bargaining agreements, knows how to apply analytics to a basketball strategy, numbers wise, shot selection, all that. But then also, kind of, you know, to use the rodeo example, like applying analysis to a game and knows how to apply that to, you know, just to scouting. Like, sometimes we don't give these guys like credit to the idea that, like, okay, yeah, Sasha Gupta did not play college basketball, but that doesn't mean he's been working in the NBA for like 15 years. You can learn how to analyze prospects. You can learn like X's and O's. You can learn that stuff. And these guys are brilliant enough to, you know, to be able to do that. So I just wanted to say that, like, I feel kind of bad for some of these stats guys that just get labeled as just one thing, trade machine guy, stat right. guy, whatever. Like, he's more diverse than that.
Yeah, like you're saying, that much time around the NBA, I mean, undeniable knowledge of the game for sure, paired with that experience. And I think that can kind of transition us to the number one pick that the Minnesota Timberwolves ended up lucking into in the lottery there. And fitting with what we've talked about with Sachin and Rosas as well. My impression is that they seem to be just open to everything, right? There's potential trading back, trading out.
See, that's that PR, man. That's what they, Rosas, he's pumping it out there. He's a politician pumping it out there. It's like, we'll do whatever, you know? So it's like, well, you can't say we're, you can't say you did everything wrong because they said, well, consider everything. But yes, I do. They are very clearly open-minded to considering all sorts of things. But I'm telling you, Rosas has the politician element of the job down pat.
So what do you favor with this first pick? I'm sure you have multiple ideas, but where are you leaning right now? Is there a prospect between Edwards Ball if you were to keep it? Do you want to look for like a Beal or something like that? What do you favor with this number one pick?
Well, obviously you want a Beal. I mean, any team would want that. I think that'd be the optimal situation. I don't think there's a realistic situation out there where the Wolves are going to be able to be like, here you go, like the one pick. We have James Johnson's like salary fodder and Jarrett Culver. Like, come on in, Brad Beal. Come on in, Booker or Simmons or whatever. Like those things. That's just unrealistic, you know, given the relatively lesser value, I think, of the number one overall pick. It's just that you, I don't think you're going to be able to flip it into anything that special. So for me, it's just kind of my theory with the Timberwolves of like, eventually they do need to add that third star. You're not just going to be able to do that right away this year. There's not a guy out there to just go to be had. So what I think is it's about, what I'm calling it is like trade back and stack assets. So you kind of, you know, the Knicks have the 8th pick. Say they really want LaMelo. Like you grab the 8th pick from them and maybe you grab their first next season. Like 2021, way better draft. Now the Wolves have that. They also have 8 this year to be able to grab someone called like Devin Vassell, something like that. And now you have this like 2021 pick. You have more picks where down the line, you can stack your assets into you know, enough so that when a player really becomes available, you do have the necessary draft capital to be able to go and you know, acquire that sort of player. But yeah, that's generally what I think they ultimately will do, because it's just hard to see them being like, yep, here we go, Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball. It just doesn't really fit the Carl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell, who are like 24, 25 years old, doesn't really fit their timeline arc, I don't think.
Yeah, definitely see where you're coming from there. And I think that, you know, trading down in this draft definitely makes a lot of sense, especially when, like you said, the top two guys aren't a great fit with the core that you got going on. And I'm curious, actually, real quick, you also own pick 17 from Brooklyn. And is there guys that stick out to you there? I know you've been doing great draft work, by the way. We've done draft profiles. Anybody looking for more draft profiles, definitely check out what Dane's doing. What are some of your draft crushes, I'll say? I know you're a big Neesmith guy, right?
I am a big Neesmith guy. Yeah, I have him like 6th or 7th on my board, which I guess apparently is now that I've started to look at other people's boards, is a lot higher than normal. And I think for me, Neesmith really stands out, and I understand he'll probably be more of a late lottery pick around, you know, where the Kings are. But I think you just can't underrate that he has the size to be more than just like a shooter. I think like at a minimum, and this is like a real minimum, like he's like frickin' Cork Miles, right? Where it's just this big guy who can really shoot the ball. He'll always be able to shoot the ball. There's always going to be room on every team for a guy like that. Now, can he use that size to apply it to more of a off-the-dribble game to be able to get to the hoop? I think he showed some of that physicality, but played a little bit out of control when he was attacking the rim at Vanderbilt this year. I think he's 6'6", 6'11", wingspan, like, almost 220, like that's a big guy to be able to play on your wing. The issue is that his defensive film at Vanderbilt was atrocious. And And I think there's two ways to look at that, where it's like, okay, he's just a bad defender and he's exclusively a shooter. But when you factor in that he had the stress fracture in his foot, like a stress fracture is something that like builds over time before it ultimately like breaks. So I think glass half full is the idea that foot was bothering him kind of the whole year, and that it was slowing him down ultimately before it broke. Like it would kind of make sense that if it was an issue the whole year, it was slowing down his foot speed. I don't know if it is it fully healed and he's able to move laterally better, he's able to stay in front of a guy. Like that's probably what it's gonna take for him to become an actual two-way player. But the shot and the physicality for him is pretty undeniable in my opinion.
I see where you're coming from. So a lot of Sacramento is debating, it seems like, or the fan base at least, and probably myself, I think it sort of comes down to Nesmith, Bay, and Patrick Williams at 12. And I also have a little bit of Poku interest now, sure. Weirdly. Unless somebody falls, obviously. So my thing with Nesmith versus Bay, I feel like what you were describing with Nesmith, like Bay fits fairly well. There isn't the wingspan, which is concerning for a guy that prides himself on the defensive end, but Bay has it's not the same level as shot, but a really damn promising three-point shot working for him, a little bit off the movement. There's a little bit of an off-the-dribble game, and at the same time, like, showed really good versatility on the defensive end. And while, like, there is the concern of his lateral quickness, it was definitely more showed on that end than Nesmith. So what is your reasoning on, like, Nesmith compared to Bay?
Yeah, I'm not low on Bay. I think Bay's really interesting. He's got kind of that big sort of slow-mo attack from the wing game. It kind of reminds me of Joe Ingles in a way. I think for a team who's looking for that role player to be able to play on the wing, Sadiq Bay makes a lot of sense. I think the difference for me is while I know the three-point percentages for both of them are really comparable, it just my subjective judgment of the two jump shots is I just think Nesmith is a much purer shooter. I think will be a more dynamic shooter at the next level. And ultimately, that's kind of like the selling point on both of them, right? Or certainly is for Nesmith. And so I think Bay can be a guy who's going to knock down threes for you in the league, but not necessarily like create them for himself. Whereas Nesmith, I think, is going to be able to create threes for himself off the dribble. But also, I think he's elite at like getting into space to making himself open to create those things. I just think he's going to be a far more dynamic 3-point shooter and just score at the next level than Bay is. But it's definitely, I mean, I'm with you where it's certainly a safer bet that Bay is going to be, or Bay's definitely going to be a better defender than Nesmith is. I think we're just talking about a guy who has a chance to be an elite offensive player in Aaron Nesmith. So that if I'm betting on the upside there, I guess, a little bit more.
Yeah. And again, I should clarify for the listeners, actually, I did fall off of Nesmith and Bay a little bit at 12 since I've transitioned to after the atrocious Sacramento bubble performance of just going somebody with upside. So that's why I've come around to Poku a little bit and like a Patrick Williams sort of thing there. And
man, Williams is weird. His film is just terrible. I know he's 18, but his film is terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it has to, you know, the build is obviously appealing. Like there's just only so many of these like 6'8 guys, but
sure, I'm totally with that. Like, physically imposing, exciting in that way. I completely agree. Like, it's why I'm not low on it. Like, I think I have Williams like 14th for me, which whatever.
He's like, just so raw. Like, it's these, you know, just dragging the pivot foot. Like, it's just all these like fundamentally like, raw.
Travels all the time. Like, stepping into his jump shot is completely different every time. Like, yeah, you are totally just, if you're drafting him, you are drafting a body. And you better have like a damn good development team to be able to put something together there. Like, I don't know. It's for the Wolves. If they didn't trade the first pick, like I would maybe be okay with taking him at 17 because it's, I don't think you're getting anything out of him, like his first couple of years in the league. You know what I mean? So like, yep. Have your, you don't want to have your rookie, like your one rookie be this guy who's like, oh, we're like not a playoff team. And our rookie, our first round pick doesn't even play. Like, I think he's going to be a guy who doesn't even play in his first season.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball and basketball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion, we'll go with six-time NBA champion, Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
And the last thing I want to ask you here, obviously in that D'Angelo Russell trade, Minnesota moved on from their draft selection next year. How are you feeling about that in a pretty loaded draft? Obviously, they got the guy, to keep Cat happy there and a good fit. But, you know, I guess it's a two-headed question of this. Like, how do you feel of not having the draft pick next year? And a lot of that has to do with how well do you think Minnesota will do in this upcoming season?
Well, I'll add a third tentacle to that. It sucks for fake trade making because, one, not only do they not have a 2021 first that they could, like, include in some sort of – like, if they had that first and you had the number one pick, like, okay, now we can, like, start talking, like, some pretty serious draft capital to be able to throw at someone. But they don't have that, and worse, it, like, protections on it carry to 2022, which means they can't trade a future first until 2024. So that's why it really just screws up like any sort of multiple first round pick trade. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What are the protections on it?
It's top three protected in 2021 and then unprotected in 2022.
Got it.
So I think, I mean, I would like to think the Timberwolves are not going to have not going to get a top three pick next year. Like they're pretty incentivized to win, you know, like, you wouldn't want to have a bad record and have that convert, you know, right. I don't think. Those are the protections on those two. It's one reason why when I'm talking about my trade back and stack thing, it's why it would, an additional like bonus, I think, to picking up a 2021 first would be that now you don't have run into like step-in role issues of being able to trade picks in back-to-back years. And now I'm forgetting what the other two tentacles of of my response. What was the rest of the question?
With it being a strong 2021.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a rough situation, right? Same time, like it was interesting, you know, your point of pick number one this year where I would think of Minnesota as a team that would look for young talent, but like Cat and D'Lo aren't the youngest at this point.
No. Yeah, that's – but it's ultimately like – all right, well, you still got off of Andrew Wiggins. So, to me, like, you know, you and I were having this conversation a year ago, and we're like, all right, four more years for Andrew Wiggins, like $130 million or whatever. Like, I would have gladly taken giving up a 2021 first-round pick to be rid of that. So, we always got to kind of, like, remember that element of it is, like, Andrew Wiggins isn't on the team anymore. Win. Like, so... So with that, like, if you're obsessed with the 2021 draft, like your scouts are like, oh, yeah, this is going to be like the 03 draft 2.0. Well, then go ahead. Friggin' flip this number one overall pick for something next year. Like, you could trade the number one overall pick to, like, Cleveland or something right now, and they would give you their 2021 pick, I'm assuming. There'd be some risk baked in there. It could end up being, like, the seventh pick in the 2021 draft. But if you're really obsessed with it, it's not like it's impossible for them to get into it there. Like, yeah, it kind of sucks. But going back to the Cat and D'Lo point, I don't think they're in a spot where you're trying to add that 19-year-old right now. Like, it's, as you know, with like De'Aaron Fox, like it does take a couple of years, and particularly with Cat, like in this Cat window, how many years are left? If they got the number one overall pick in 2021, that guy probably isn't going to be enough to like really move the needle for a couple years from there. And now all of a sudden, you know, Cat's in the Giannis situation right now. Obviously he's not Giannis's caliber, but it's the same sort of thing. So I'm kind of done with the draft as far as like needing to get your star, like make what you can out of this Cat window and go get your second star via trade. Which leads me to a question I have for you. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, of course.
So like, and you know, totally dismiss this if I'm off base here, but I hear it every single day. Somebody sends me like a stupid what the Wolves could trade for Devin Booker or Ben Simmons, you know, sort of offer, and even started to get some Giannis ones. And I'm like, all right, chill, like this, like that's not happening. But I do think it's fair to say that De'Aaron Fox, like, does fall into that Devin Booker-ish range, probably a little less than Devin Booker, I think. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
As a prospect? Okay.
I'm already serious.
Yeah. No, so honestly, here's just my question. Is, like, is it a lock that they're going to give him a max extension?
I think it is. Okay. I think he's probably, like, the only exciting piece moving forward. I would think he's the only like lock on the roster.
Sure. Okay. Right. Which was my assumption. But just like in general, and we don't even need to apply this to the Wolves, like, is there any bit of you, if you were Sasha Gupta moving in to take the Kings gig, where you would go, am I sure I want to lock into De'Aaron Fox on a max contract for the next year, 5 years, rather than being able to trade him on the last year of his rookie scale deal for probably a pretty substantial return? Is that at all intriguing?
I personally would not be a fan, but I see the logic to it if you're like, okay, I don't know how we make it work around Fox. Like, he's the only young piece. So if you were tearing everything down, I could see how that could also include Fox. Like, it's possible. I'm not a fan of it, and I don't think they would do it, but I see where you're coming from.
I just feel like I'm with you. It's probably not gonna, I just don't understand why Fox's name never comes up. Like, he's worse than Booker and Simmons in a similar stage of his career and hasn't yet signed his max deal yet. So there's kind of like, if it were to happen, if he were to get traded, it would make sense, you know, for the Kings to do it before they locked him into their max con to like some sort of max deal. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, I guess more so the question is, when I've just been playing around with like fake number one trades, and it, since the Wolves kind of landed the pick, because I ultimately think that's going to do it, and I come up to Sacramento and I'm just like, I honestly don't even know what the answer is. Like, there's pretty much for every team, right? Like, there's a price. Like, there's a price that the Kings probably would agree to trade De'Aaron Fox to some team. Maybe the Wolves don't have enough assets, but maybe it's the Thunder or the Pelicans or somebody who's loaded. Like, what do you, if you were the Kings GM taking over for Divots, like, what would be that price for you to basically forego paying De'Aaron Fox a max contract?
I don't hate paying him. And like, I do think, I worry about his defense, I think more than some people do. But I actually think that, like, he, you know, I've heard the term a lot recently, especially this crazy Boston Toronto series, like, he's a gamer. He steps up to the big moments. And like, a part of it is that he wants to be in Sacramento, and that's pretty rare. I'm paraphrasing, but there was a quote after this season, something along the lines of like, I want to be here because the fan base is great, and when you do finally win here, it would just be an amazing feeling to be the leader of that. And I think that Fox likes to be the leader. So, and obviously, like you said, like, there is a price. I'd have to
think about it a bit more before I throw out something and regret what I say.
I mean, I just think like there's got like I'm not even approaching this from the Timberwolves lens, because I don't really think that that would be the best option. But I'm sure a bunch of your listeners are like diehard Fox fans, so I'm not even like trying to.
Oh yeah, you're popular. Sashin's not coming, and we're traded Fox.
No, but I just like at some point you got to go like, all right, I don't think De'Aaron Fox is probably like a number one, right?
Right.
And like, if we're talking like championship, he's probably not a number two either. So it's, I think you got to consider it. Basically, I think it should be in like the realm of possibilities that whoever takes over that GM job, like they got to see what is the offer that would be put on the table for it. Because I don't know, man. Like, look at the Thunder. Look at the Thunder. And I know Fox isn't going to bring back like what Paul George did, but what if it was kind of close? Like, right. you're saying like rebuilds the way to go, like retool. And if we don't think De'Aaron Fox is a superstar, which I think you and I are on the same page of, and I like Fox. I do like Fox.
I think ceiling, he could be that number two guy, but we're not too far off.
I do too. I do too. But I mean, like, yeah, it's just like, I don't know if I'm a Kings fan, if I'm like, yep, here goes the rebuild and we're doing it around De'Aaron Fox. Like, I know for me, that's what I've experienced with Karl Anthony Towns. And it's like, ultimately why I think the Wolves are probably like, this is destined to not work, is because they're making a plan that is built around Karl Anthony Towns being the number one. And ultimately, I think he's not that. Like, I don't think he, whether that's, and I can't speak to like De'Aaron Fox. I don't know, like haven't talked to him, or obviously I'm not watching as many Kings games as you have, but it's just, I'm just telling you from, I guess, what is the Wolves are with Cat, like basically 2 years in advance of where you're at with Fox right now. And they're pretty much like gung ho down this path of like, evolve our team to be everything Cat. And everything we do is build around him. Well, what is the ceiling of that? Like, what is the best outcome when ultimately, like, what is Karl Anthony Towns the 12th best player in the NBA? What is De'Aaron Fox? What, like, the 16th best player in the NBA? Like, is that the relative? I just don't know if it's a great idea to, like, if your ultimate goal is winning a championship, to be like, yep, here we go. We're going to win a championship, and our best player to do it is going to be Karl Anthony Towns, or it's going to be De'Aaron Fox. Like,
right.
If we're being real about it, like, I don't think either of those things are that realistic, which brings me to the idea of, like, I think you got to put players of that caliber together. You got to put De'Aaron Fox and Karl Anthony Towns together. And whatever, like, I'd say it has to be on the Wolves. Like, whatever, Karl Anthony Towns goes to the Kings, so the Kings go get Devin Booker or whoever that may be. I think you're just kind of setting yourself up to lose if you're like, yep, De'Aaron Fox is the king of the Kings.
Yeah, and I think that the idea is that, you know, the hope was obviously Bagley to be the star guy and Fox to sort of be the number two there, and obviously that hasn't panned out amazingly, but and that's kind of why I'm, you know, they're going to be freaking bad in 2021. Yeah. And you would hope to get a guy in the draft. This is why I'm favoring building through the draft that can be better than Fox, because I agree with you. Like, Fox can't be your number one guy if your goal is a championship, which it should be.
Right. And you're totally right. That's the total fair counter argument, is you go, yeah, well, just because we signed De'Aaron Fox to a max doesn't mean he's our number one. Like, we're going to win the lottery and get Cade Cunningham.
But I see what you're saying. Like, he's probably the best value right now in that value, or the best asset right now, and the value falls when he signs that max.
I just think when we're sitting around here with like this endless off season and you're playing around with it, I keep coming back to it. And I'm like, I just feel like De'Aaron Fox has been put in the, like, you know, now I'm into like fantasy football where you have like the, your players on your team that you can't cut. They have like the X on them. Right. Like I feel like De'Aaron Fox has one of those over. I'm like, can't trade. And I don't know. I personally, as someone who's much further removed from the Kings than you are, or all of your listeners are, that just like doesn't totally line up in my head. And I would wonder if whoever they hire to be the GM might think in that way too, or, you know, might at least be considering moving him sometime in the next few years.
Right. I see where you're coming from. You know, another part of it, obviously, like he's just so clearly on a tier above everybody else on the roster.
Sucks.
And right. and the PR of it, like the fan base is in love with him. And like I said, he likes being in Sacramento, which is
right. Rare. That's the stuff like I can't, that I miss out on, you know, not being there, not. And that stuff matters. That matters from a business standpoint, like 100%. Right. I think that factors into the equation.
Yeah. So, but yeah.
What about Hield?
Oh, I think Hield, my guess is Hield's gone.
So what are you, how much are you looking back for there? Like a trade with the Wolves would be James Johnson as the money. It's just an expiring like $16 million contract. Like, do you just do James Johnson expiring and Jarrett Culver for Buddy Hield? And you're just off the money? Or I don't know. I mean,
would you do like Johnson, Culver, and 17?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would. I don't think that's a great Buddy Hield contract.
Right.
And that's, I think, the issue. When you apply it to the Wolves too, like every trade needs to be looked through the lens of like, all right, so you're adding this guy to play next to Towns and Russell who have been chronically poor defenders. So
right.
Buddy Hield is just like Zach LaVine is another name that, you know, is kind of thrown out there. It's like, I don't know how you, it's probably just like a non-starter. So I think like if the Wolves did just go all in on offense, I could see them going with Hield, but almost as like a salary filler in a way for like their future deal. Like, all right, we pick up Hield for this. Like the new GM of the Kings just doesn't want anything to do with Hield. So they're like, let's just get him out of here, get his bad deal off the books. I could see the Wolves like absorbing that for James Johnson. And Jarrett Culver's not nothing. He was the sixth pick last year. Like, he had right. a bad rookie year. But I could maybe see that. But once we start talking about, I don't think if you're the Kings, you're getting a first plus another guy who is a first last year, but I don't know. I guess that's kind of the point of me asking the question is
no,
I don't understand what his value is exactly.
Yeah. And it's rough. And you know, it sucks because if anything, I think it would be more Hield asking out rather than the GM deciding that he should get out of here. Just kind of reading between the lines with all of his, he's not shy with his quotes.
I've noticed that
not being content with coming off the bench and the whole Walton situation. Walton just terribly misutilized Hield on both ends of the floor. So it's a rough situation. And going into that big contract, we floated around like Tim Hardaway Jr. in the 18th pick, who's like expiring, or, you know, like I think our favorite one that maybe is a bit of a dream is like, is Indiana like worried about this logjam, which I don't know if they are. And like, could you get Miles Turner? But yeah, I mean the values,
I kind of like the Mavs one, like,
right. It's a little bit of a placeholder.
I'm more so thinking basically, if I'm being honest, I'm looking at any sort of like Buddy Hield trade as on the other side first of like, can or would this team stomach it? Like, how would they be incentivized to take on a $94 million contract?
Right.
And I think with the Mavs, you go like, I mean, we'll take, like, that's a shooter right there. And then that's kind of like a step in the right direction for next year. And it becomes, they're like, but does that kill their cap space then for 2021?
Right.
I think it would.
I was shocked that some Hawks writers were like interested in like absorbing him into the cap space, because like, what else are they going to get for pick six? But I tend to disagree with the cap space thing, because I'm like, you can get a Joe Harris or like Malik Beasley that like kind of fills the same role for way less.
I mean, half probably.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, yeah. I think that would be, but I do. I mean, I'm generally like a pro Buddy guy. More probably, I think I'm higher on Buddy, relatively speaking, than I am Fox. Obviously, Fox is a far superior player, but I would love to see Buddy Hield not in Sacramento, put it like that, and see, like,
yeah,
I just, like 2 years ago, like around the All-Star break, I'm like, Buddy Hield is. He shoots like 48% from three. Like, what more do you need? What more did they like? He wasn't like that far away from being an All-Star.
Right.
It felt like. And now we're like, I don't know. This dude sucks. Like, makes $20 million, $20-something million a year. Like,
yeah, there's
a reclamation. There's a reclamation, like, path out there for Buddy Hield next year where he's all of a sudden, like, on the Rockets or whatever, and he's scoring 27 points a game. And is shooting like 45% from three. Like, I don't think that's
for sure.
Like, out of the realm of possibilities at all for him, and it might be out of the realm of possibilities if he stays in Sacramento. So,
yeah, it's going to be hilarious when Luka Doncic and Buddy Hield are just going crazy on the Dallas Mavericks. It's going to be so fun for Kings fans.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, man, you guys are. I can speak from it from having been there. You guys are approaching some. Some times, some dark times ahead, but like, but if you like, it's going into the tank is not as bad when you like see the path out of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, which I think that seems to be where the Kings could be going here, where it's like, you know what? 2021, not a bad year to suck, right? Get a good pick. Now we have De'Aaron Fox. He's starting his new contract, we're building on him, Cade Cunningham, whatever, like on our way back out. It's when the worst is when you're just like, we're one of the worst teams in the West and probably will be for the next 3 or 4 years. Like that's the bad. And I don't know. I mean, you guys just gotta like shed a year of salaries from all those guys and you gotta hit the 2021 draft.
Right. Yeah, it's scary because they kind of fall under both categories here with debating on a couple different moves. But yeah, I've been running for a little while here, Dane. I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time out of your day, man, talking about Sasha and draft and a couple other things here. And yeah, definitely everybody, like I said, you're doing great, great work. I'm super interested in the Timberwolves. Weirdly, I had a friend that, have a friend, I act like something happened to him. that was just jumped on in when he was in Chicago, got drafted by in his 2K team by the Chicago Bulls and just became a huge Jimmy Butler fan and has followed Jimmy everywhere he's gone. And when he ended up in Minnesota, I followed it a bit as well. And since then have been very interested in Minnesota. But that was a long lead up to me saying you do a great job covering the team. So anybody interested, definitely check out your work and you're doing general draft stuff that applies to Sacramento definitely as well. So yeah, thanks Dane. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, man. Anytime. Always fun to just shoot the shit about the NBA, particularly when who knows when we're going to be back to some actual relevant information with the league. And this is kind of all we can do right now. Like, I don't want to hear any pushback from anybody like, oh my God, that's such a terrible idea. It's like, what the hell are we supposed to talk about? It's the middle of September. And I mean, you like the Kings at least went to the bubble. The Wolves are not going to play a game, a basketball game. Like if we don't start till January, they're going to play a basketball game for 10 months, like 10 months. So, I mean, it's hard times out here in the content creation industry in the NBA. So I appreciate you sticking with it too. And like, man, if there's ever a time for people to get into the draft, like get into the draft, right? Like
right.
Just watch these guys. Like for me, I've never been a draft guy. Like, and I've just like, that was my quarantine activity. It's just like plowing through film on Synergy of these dudes. And I think it's going to be, I'm so glad I did that because that's going to be such like a, it's going to be so interesting to follow the next 3 years of like how stupid, like you and I talk about like, clearly you don't like Neesmith like I do, or how is that going to all play out and actually have like a draft take based off of your own film watching and not just like, oh, I read like 16 different mock drafts and this is what they said. I've made my take out of other people's takes. Like, I think it's the thing to do. Like, go out there and watch some, you can watch all of LaMelo Ball's games on like YouTube or Facebook. Like, just don't turn one of those on. I think it's a totally worthwhile basketball activity these days.
Definitely is, especially for Timberwolves and Kings fans. But yeah, thanks Dane for coming on, and thanks everybody for listening. Check out thekingsherald.com for great independent Kings coverage. And if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review. You'll hear from us again in the next couple of days here.